Hello and welcome to the Breaking Canon podcast. I'm James Callahan.
I'm Julius Freeman.
And I'm Joel Saito.
This week on the show, our Terminator series continues with a discussion of 2009's Terminator Salvation, written by John Brancato and Michael Ferris, and directed by McG. Jules, what did you think of Salvation?
Oh, boy. You know, it's not that bad.
Compared to what?
it's not as bad as I remembered it. I don't know if that makes me more disappointed or happy that it wasn't as bad as I remembered, because I kind of wanted it to be a little worse. I guess it was better than I remembered, and it made it, I guess, a bit more enjoyable.
So you're expecting absolute shit show?
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping for an absolute shit show.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what I thought I had remembered. Maybe my expectations were so low that when I watched it, I was just like, oh, okay, this isn't that bad.
Fair enough.
But then it kind of like landed in this like awkward middle ground of like, it's not quite nearly as bad as I was wanting it to be in order for me to fully enjoy it. But, you know, I enjoyed it.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I saw the trailer for this years ago when it first came out, and I was actually stoked. I was actually like, oh, cool, Christian Bale, awesome, it's John Connor.
Yeah.
Pretty cool, you know, and at that point, I was already over the whole, you know, when you're at your early to mid 20s, you want everything to be perfect. And if it doesn't come out perfect, then you crap all over the movie or you crap all over the show.
I mean, so, I still do that now. So,
yeah. I've eased up on that. But that was around the point where I was like, you know what? It's not James Cameron. That's okay. You know, I'm going to see what someone else is going to do with it. And on top of that, I was hyped because we're finally going to get to see the war between man and machine.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was honestly like stoked. And when I watched it, it was like you said, Jules, it was all right. It was cool. It was entertaining.
Yeah.
It was better than Terminator 3. I'll tell you that.
Mm.
But upon watching it again for the podcast, I remembered how much I did enjoy it. But at the same time, I also remembered how a lot of the notes that they try to hit fell flat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of got me like, oh, like, okay, all right, we got what we got, fine. But it was still, like you said, entertaining, Jules. And
yeah.
Sam Worthington's performance was atrocious upon watching it. But we could talk about that in more detail. But yeah, that's how I felt. It was still entertaining. I still found myself like enjoying it. And I was not mesmerized, but I was it got me interested when I was watching it again. Because I got distracted a few times, but then immediately I was like, oh, whoa, whoa, I forgot about this scene. I forgot how cool this scene was. You know, that kind of deal. So,
yeah. It's frustratingly mid.
There you go.
Well, okay. First thing, I just want to point out, I think it's very interesting that we have now covered three Sam Worthington movies on this podcast. We're like almost a Sam Worthington podcast.
Man.
A couple more.
They try to force them down our throats. Huh?
Yeah. So this was my first time seeing this movie, and my expectations were really low because the movie got really bad reviews when it came out, and it underperformed, and it seemed like fans didn't really want this shit, and so I just didn't bother. The only thing that I was curious about with this movie in the lead up to it was what pissed off Christian Bale so much that made him go on that rant. And of course, I watched it a few times in preparation for this for this episode. And let me tell you, I actually like that rant a lot more than I like this movie. Oh, my expectations were so low, and I hated this movie, guys. Like anything that I thought was actually a redeeming quality was located, buried somewhere in the first and second act of this movie. But this movie nosedives in its second act and it never recovers. And it completely falls to pieces at the end in the most spectacular way. And the thing I really disliked about it the most was that for a movie that is this dumb, it takes itself so seriously that it just got on my nerves. Yep. I was reading about McGee's, like, you know, various inspirations in making this, and he brought up movies like Apocalypse Now. He had his cast and crew read The Road and Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Electric Sheep, yeah.
This is not that. This is not up to that caliber whatsoever.
I'm going to go on the record and say that I like McGee.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
And the things that you're pointing out about this movie are things that I kind of find, what's the word?
Endearing.
Okay. Endearing about it. Like, there's this endearing quality to McGee's earnestness when it comes to making movies in general, and especially this one.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, I don't know. It didn't really hit its mark at all. Especially like when the mark is like he's aiming for Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. There's like something about that, like sort of that ambition,
mm-hmm.
that, and when you see like the final product, it just, I can't hate it. And it made me just feel like, I read that too, like that what his inspirations were, and mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah, exactly.
was my reaction to it. And I can't hate it. You know, I can't hate him for that. Like there's something there about his earnestness.
That I can see that. But that was what missed the mark for me. Was the fact that he took it to that direction. That was definitely an artistic choice that was probably the wrong one. Because when I went to the theater to watch this movie, I was expecting to see full-on fucking blue laser gunfire, but we got fucking bullets. And I was like, what the hell? Dude, where's my blue lasers? Why didn't you keep the blue lasers? You could have kept the Apocalypse Now aesthetic. Fine. Mm-hmm. I don't care. Mm-hmm. But why did you take away the blue laser gunfire?
Blue lasers.
Dang, dude. What a waste. What a waste.
He was saving it for the sequel. He was saving all the good stuff for the sequel.
He should have just pulled the trigger.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, he should have just pulled the trigger. And I think the old Terminator fans, for me specifically, I would have been all in. And I wouldn't have cared how else mm-hmm. he shot the movie. As long as I got my fucking blue lasers, which is what I wanted to see.
Blue lasers.
It would have actually, you know what, you're right. I did think about that, but the more you mention it, the more I realize like that could have really like boosted the aesthetic of this movie to have some kind of, you know, just to have the lasers, you know,
sci-fi.
That we're so used to.
Like, making more sci-fi.
Used to seeing in the prologues of the previous movies.
Exactly.
Or some fucking color.
Mm-hmm. That's my mm-hmm. issue.
This movie is so washed out.
It is absolutely. So washed out in that ugly, like, 2000s kind of look.
Yeah.
And actually, all it looks like is, like, an expensive episode of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Also, Book of Eli. I know this movie came out first and before Book of Eli, but that's okay. Kind of what it reminded me of when I was watching this
movie. Well, this came out before Walking Dead as well. So yeah. maybe Terminator Salvation was the blueprint for those two.
Well, good on McGee.
It's a really strange choice.
Yeah. Yes.
The look of this movie. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I'm most I don't know, upset about or just kind of annoyed with mm-hmm. was how it looks, because there is such an established look and feel from the first two Terminator movies of what this future feels like. And that's what, you know, as a Terminator fan, that's kind of what you want to, that's what you're expecting. That's what you want out of it. And I know it's like, you know, supposed to be like, oh, the future's changed. Like, you know, the Judgment Day was pushed later and, you know, whatever. But the decision to go to use that as an excuse to go in a different direction to get a completely different look is the wrong takeaway, I think.
Yeah.
He used like some technique in the post-production of the film, developing the actual film
reel. Some kind of bleach process or something?
Yeah, it's like a bleaching process. It just basically like washes out the color, basically. And it's like, why would you purposely do that to your movie and like wash out the colors?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's like the one thing that was like a bizarre like decision, I thought. Because, you know, I like the other things that he does with this, you know. It's like, it's the most expensive Terminator movie to date. Somehow, yeah. And it's because, you know, he wanted to, like, keep in the spirit of, like, James Cameron or, you know, I guess Apocalypse Now. Yeah. But, like, actually doing practical effects and, like, blowing shit up and, like, building an actual warehouse to blow up and, like, you know, doing actual explosions and whatever in the desert, and doing as much practically as possible. But then, like, you give the footage that you shot this, like, weird effect with, like, the bleaching that, like, it's made it look fake anyway.
Yeah.
So it's like you spent $200 million to do all these like cool practical effects and then you just like fucked up the footage so that you can't even like really tell where that money is.
And because, you know, there's nothing light in this story or in its tone or in the way the characters portray these characters, there's no comic relief whatsoever. It's such a dour experience. Shooting it this way just makes it seem even more absurd. Like, there were moments I definitely laughed. I mean, not to jump ahead, but the moment where Christian Bale says, "I'll be back," is, I don't remember the last time I laughed that hard at a movie, but I was definitely laughing at the movie and not,
you know,
with
it. I actually liked that delivery.
Okay, fair enough.
That was one of the few callbacks that I didn't mind. And I was like, oh, haha. Like, the other one where, like, he's listening to the Linda Hamilton recording and he's looking at the photo. It's not even a callback. It's a callback. But it's just like using audio bites from the other film. Like, I don't know. It was just like weird. And he's just like staring at a photo.
Well, all of that just confused me about what timeline this is supposed to take place in and how connected it is to the previous films, because it feels like it's supposed to be kind of, well, it's supposed to launch a franchise, which was their first mistake. The fact that this movie doesn't stand on its own at all whatsoever, that you need to know everything that happened in the previous three films and also have the patience for what might come after this first film, because it ends in such an unsatisfying way. I had a really hard time understanding why this movie, I guess where this movie is supposed to take place within the canon. And why anybody would give a shit. If you're new to this franchise, there is nothing for you in this movie whatsoever. And if you've seen part one and part two, you know it can be so much better. So who's this movie for?
So in terms of the timeline, it kind of establishes, right, that it's comes after the events of Terminator 3. Or, like, you know, 1, 2, and 3 happen, mm-hmm. and then it's... And
so this is supposed to be Nick Stahl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so.
And Claire Danes.
And Edward Furlong. So, what was it? Michael Edwards is, like, the guy who is, like, stood in as John Connor in Terminator 2 in the flashback scene.
Oh, that's right.
Which, yeah. Christian Bale actually kind of looks like him, so I was just like, oh, okay, that works more so than Nick Stahl.
Definitely. Yeah. I do like Bale's performance in this, and I like the character more than in Terminator 3. So I'll give it that.
But okay, so what Terminator 3 establishes is that what happened in the previous two movies actually did change the future, and so we're in a new timeline from the original timeline that sent Kyle Reese back into the past, right? So it's no longer like the whole bootstrap paradox where it's like the chicken or the egg situation. It's now firmly in the territory of, okay, we've created branching timelines.
Mm-hmm.
Terminator 3 establishes, okay, because T2 leaves it kind of ambiguous, right? Like, we don't know, but we're hopeful. T3 It's like, okay, Judgment Day didn't happen when it was supposed to happen, but it got pushed further,
right,
or pushed later, and it still happens. But now we're in a new timeline where Judgment Day happens just later. And so this is supposed to be like the future of that. So it's not necessarily the same future that you see from Terminator 1 and 2 flashbacks. Mm-hmm. It's like a different future.
Okay. So this John Connor actually hung out with Arnold's T-800.
Yeah. And okay. the thing that I guess tips that off is the fact that John Connor in this movie, upon hearing Kyle Reese's name, realizes, you know, what he has to do.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, he's listening to Linda Hamilton's recording that she made in Terminator 1. So it's clearly like, you know, a new timeline or whatever. And this John Connor is the John Connor that hung out with Arnold, and blah, 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 which, you know, makes the movie make a lot less sense, because why is Arnold like, or not Arnold, why is John Connor so skeptical in this movie of Sam Worthington?
Yeah.
When, you know, his best friends were robots. But, but you know, that's where this is supposed to land in the Terminator timeline, the Terminator canon.
Okay.
It's the shifted timeline where Judgment Day happened later. John Connor knows T-800, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Okay.
And he knows that Kyle Reese is his dad.
Okay. Cause I couldn't tell if this was supposed to be like a side timeline, like half prequel, half sequel, like something that takes place in a separate from what we've seen in the previous three movies. Because I mean, tonally, it's so different from the first three. Yeah. It's amazing that this movie shares the same writer as the third, or the same writing team as part three. Although apparently the script was rewritten a lot during production.
Yeah, this script is written by
Jonathan Nolan,
Brancato and Ferris, who wrote T3.
Right.
Who apparently they also wrote The Game, which is an amazing movie.
Oh, wow. But then, okay. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Then they wrote Catwoman and then T3 and then this. Oh, so, whoops. You know, and then a string of awesome movies after that. But also, Paul Haggis has an uncredited rewrite on the script.
Yeah.
Sean Ryan, who was the creator of The Shield, has an uncredited rewrite on the script. And then finally, Jonah Nolan, fresh off of The Dark Knight, did on-set rewrites throughout the shooting.
That's the one that actually made the most sense to me, because then I started comparing some of the plot direction and the sci-fi in this to Westworld, and it was actually starting to make sense that that Nolan would actually be involved in this. Yeah, it definitely, this is a movie that definitely feels like it was being rewritten during production.
Yeah,
I feel like, you know, Christian Bale is obviously committed, you know. He's emotionally engaged. You can hear it in his voice when he's screaming at the cinematographer. He really wants to do a good job. His performance is really solid in this. The character, I mean, is kind of one-dimensional. It's really just what you know about this character already going in. He spends a lot of time talking into radios. A lot of time in a, you know, control rooms talking into a radio or shouting into a radio. Doesn't have a lot to do until the very end when things really fall apart.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, for whatever reason, they decided that the story is going to focus on Sam Worthington as opposed to John Connor.
Kyle Reese. Don't forget Kyle Reese.
Barely. He's in it for like the beginning, and he becomes just like the damsel in distress eventually.
Yeah.
Or like the MacGuffin that they need to go and get.
Yeah, that's what I meant, the MacGuffin.
You know, the main focus is on this new character that they've created, who's, I guess, a convicted murderer, who his body gets turned into an android.
Right.
Or a cyborg. And then just happens to wake up after, you know, the opening set piece in the beginning of the movie. You know, the story doesn't make sense, guys.
No. I'm glad you brought that up. We got to take this back to the beginning, because I mean, I didn't realize this watching it this time because it was my first time. Reflecting on it, I realized this movie was stupid from the get-go, because I don't understand the point of this hybrid Terminator. It makes no sense whatsoever. And over the course of this movie reveals how dumb Skynet is and the major limitations of trying to launch a franchise with James Cameron's like leftovers, basically. The little bits of world building that he did in the margins of his Terminator story is what they're trying to build a trilogy out of. And you see in this movie the huge limitations of trying to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's only so far you could take it.
Like I said, this is like something endearing about like how dumb it is.
I will say, McGee is a fantastic action director. I was really impressed with the action scenes. The story, yeah, the story, of course, like you said, it's endearingly action, yeah. Dumb. But I was really impressed with all the action sequences, specifically the motorcycle Terminators.
Yes.
Those were cool.
I didn't love the motorcycle Terminators. They felt too much like a callback. Like, what, did Skynet see Terminator 2 and thought, oh, that's a cool idea?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, you know, I think that the strength of this movie, you're right, Julius, it's the action, and it's the fact that what bugged me the most about Terminator 3 is that, A, they recycled the plot of Terminator 2 and just did the exact same thing, even like did the exact same villain, just right. Like worse, right. You know?
Yeah.
And by this point, I was like getting sick of that whole, you know, that whole schmageggy. Mm-hmm. Of like fucking part liquid, part robot, right. Yeah, you know, yeah. Humanoid Terminator coming after our lead character. And this one, I felt like at least each of the Terminators that we see in this, you know, I mean, in the end, yeah, we get like the crowd pleaser Arnold CGI right. Yeah. Thing. But aside from that, like the Terminators that we see in this movie were actually unique,
yeah,
and different for once. Mm-hmm. Like we got, you know, like motorcycle moto Terminators,
yeah,
like shoot out of the launch out of like the feet of
the giant
yeah. Mech,
yeah,
Terminator, cool. Which yep. I thought was dope.
Yeah,
and then you also have, you know, you still have the hunter killers. You have like the like tracking droid kind of things, and then what was the other one? Oh, the underwater eel Terminators,
right?
Were dope.
Yeah,
like the lampreys cool. that like jump up and out of the water.
God, I hated all of this stuff, guys. What
I fucking loved it, dude. It's the only that's like the one redeeming quality to this movie.
Yeah,
is like,
yeah. See, well, I don't actually think there's really a redeeming quality to this movie. So,
and that's fair. And that's fair. But see, for me as a sci-fi fan, that's what I wanted to see in the newer Terminator movies. Where, like, give me something yeah. a little bit more unique. I mean, yeah, like exactly. You said, Jules, like we saw the liquid metal stuff. Okay, cool. Let's expand and see what else they've done with the self-making technology that they have that Skynet has are capable of. And we got to see that here. It's just unfortunate it was wrapped around a terrible plot that didn't really hit with audiences.
Yeah.
And my issue with a lot of these new additions to, you know, the different robots is that it all feels like this is a would-be franchise that is having a major identity crisis. And it feels like they're trying to pull from like Transformers, which was hitting at this exact moment, I believe. And that's what that giant robot reminded me of, was like, oh, cool. It's a Transformer with little, you know, motorcycles that pop out of its legs.
I can see that. Yeah.
And which is fine. It's just, again, it's like I feel like this movie proved to me that the glue that truly holds the Terminator lore together is James Cameron. And that if anybody is ever going to be able to find a way to build a franchise out of the prologue of the first two movies, it's James Cameron. Because yeah. otherwise, you're going to have a director like McGee who is just going to draw upon those first two movies and just callbacks and references to those first two movies and whatever's hot at the moment.
This is the movie that did that for you, not Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines?
And I think the difference is that at least Rise of the Machines knew it was a dumb movie and had fun with it. I laughed. I enjoyed the action. It was clear. It was colorful. I could understand what was going on most of the time. Like, I do admire what McGee is trying to do in this movie. There's a lot of those oners, like before they became done to death. But they're so obviously like stitched together with CGI that I was just like, I'd rather just have like a traditional approach to an action sequence instead, I'm just like looking for the edits.
Yeah, no, I feel you, especially in that opening.
Yes.
When John Connor crawls out from the underground base and like gets into the helicopter crashes, he's upside down, camera flips right side up. He jumps out, he comes out, and then there's like the Terminator, like half Terminator chasing after, like crawling after him. They're done here in a way where it's not like, it's not impressive. And it's very much like calling attention to itself.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Hey, look at this. This is a winner, you know, yeah. As opposed to like a really good one where it's like you're watching it and you're like really invested in it. And then like, you know, 3/4 of the way through, you're like, wait a minute, has there been any edits? You know,
yeah,
like
definitely.
This one, it was just sort of like, oh, God.
No, it definitely felt, and you know, confirmed it when I was reading about his influences. It just felt like, oh, cool. He saw Children of Men like all of us did three years before. And it was just like, I'm going to do some of that. I'm going to put a little bit of that into my movie. And this whole movie just feels like that. It feels like somebody who loves movies is, you know, influenced by a lot of different movies at the time, at the moment, in the past, whatever, but doesn't have any imagination beyond that to add anything new to this world. And the movie really suffers from that. It's such a thin plot. And then when you try to deconstruct it at all, it is so stupid. Like, nothing in this movie actually adds up to anything. Although I will say, like, to some extent, it kind of begins in a sort of promising way. Before I knew, like, how off the rails this movie was going to be. I mean, you know, it is kind of cool to see, like, okay, cool, this is the war. Even though it just looks like a desert, looks like Desert Storm.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, everything you said is exactly what I love about this movie. It's how off the rails it is. It's how dumb it is. I don't know. It's just like that. Yeah. That like this guy who just has all these like influences. He like watched all these cool movies and has all these elements that he wants to bring into it, and he just like throws it together as a hodgepodge.
Yeah.
And there's some charm to it for me.
Same here.
I want to talk a little bit about McGee for a second.
Yeah, give us your take on McGee.
All right, McGee. First of all, Orange County boy. Grew up in Orange, in Newport Beach. So we got that in common with him.
Wait a minute. Okay, so when he created the OC, that was based on his experiences.
Sort of. He didn't create it. It was Josh Schwartz who created it.
Oh, gotcha.
And then he came to McGee. He was like, hey, you're from Orange County. You want to like
oh, so he's a
help
consultant.
Me produce this movie?
Okay, I see.
And then he produced it.
Yeah,
but,
gotcha.
He was in high school, best buds with Mark McGrath of Sugar Ray.
Cool.
He originally started a band with Mark McGrath where he McGee was the front man. McGee and McGrath, the McGees, but where McGee was the front man and not Mark McGrath, and then realized like, oh shit, I'm not cut out to be in a band, and then he became like the sort of like, I don't know, I guess producer for Sugar Ray. So he produced Sugar Ray's first album, co-wrote a few songs off their second album, notably the songs Every Morning.
Yeah. Okay.
Everyone
wow.
knows that
right.
one.
Yeah.
Every
yeah.
morning.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, of course.
One of my favorites.
And Someday. Someday.
Yeah, yeah.
Na, na, na,
okay.
Na, na,
okay.
Na.
All right.
So he co-wrote those songs. Yeah. So hit songwriter on
wow.
his resume already. And then he started directing music videos.
Okay. All right.
Like pretty much all of Sugar Ray's videos. Fastball's The Way. Smash Mouth All-Star.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. He's got quite a resume here.
He does. He does.
Bare Naked Ladies, 1 week.
Okay.
It's been 1 week.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty Fly for a White Guy, Offspring.
Okay.
Got the Life by Korn.
Oh,
Santeria by Sublime.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, like this dude kind of like defined the 90s in a way. So, you know, it's kind of like he shares that in common with James Cameron.
Yeah. They're both hit makers in the 90s.
Yeah, they're both.
Yes, yes.
They both defined a generation.
That
and that generation
well.
Was the 90s, you know? They influenced the 90s in a big way. Also another fun one. he produced the unaired pilot of the U.S. remake of Spaced, the Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright, Nick Frost TV series.
Okay.
Which was so bad that it got scrapped after Fox viewed the pilot and it never aired.
I'm not surprised. Did he know that the original show was a comedy? Was his mistake that he approached the material much in the Terminator Salvation way?
No, it was completely serious. No. Okay. So anyway, that's McGee. I just wanted to point
good
McG out
corner.
Some of,
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out some of his credentials.
That's pretty cool.
Because I'm not about all this trash talking that you're doing on my boy McG, James.
Listen, for the record, I don't think there's anything wrong with McG necessarily. I haven't seen any movies he's done aside from the Charlie's Angels films, and I saw them when they came out.
Again,
and I didn't like them. So that's all the frame of reference that I have.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I bring up his music videos because it's kind of interesting because I went back and rewatched a bunch of them. And it's interesting because there's such a stark difference visually from this movie. And his music videos and Charlie's Angels, they were known for this like oversaturated coloring.
Yes,
it's like
right,
really
right.
Bright reds, mm-hmm, like super saturated, you know, these bright 90s music videos, mm-hmm, like bright reds, bright yellows and blues and like blue sky. And, you know, same with Charlie's Angels. And it seems like he swung in the complete opposite direction for this movie, where he just, you know, completely desaturated it. The mm-hmm only like standout in his music video catalog is like Santeria,
mm-hmm,
the Sublime music white, video, right? Which is, it's like a sepia tone.
Oh, okay.
Or
oh,
like,
right,
it's like,
right,
it's like washed out color and it's tinted orange. It might as well have been sepia tone, but right, it's still, it's like this movie, oddly. It's like this washed out, like one tone, you know, look, aesthetic that is, it's not quite black and white. It's not quite sepia. Because there's like spots of color still,
mm-hmm,
but it's so washed out that it might as well be black and white. And it's interesting because it's kind of like that sort of like drastic, like one or the other, like super saturated or super desaturated. Like it's just like, it seems to be like he's a man of extremes.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it's kind of encapsulated in this movie itself, because it's like this movie is just like a movie of extremes, you know, like mm-hmm he's just like went so far into one direction, you know, he's like, okay, what about a Terminator robot, but it's gigantic, you know?
What about a Terminator robot that's also part man?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like
for what purpose? I don't know. It'll look cool.
Yeah, it's like, let's do like a bunch of real life explosions, you know? Like let's blow up, like let's do a lot of fucking explosions. It's gonna be a $200 million movie. It's just like this like kind of this notion of just pushing things to the extreme, I think, really wraps up what this movie is.
And you know what? You can have a filmmaker like McG come in and do really great work if the script is good. And I think if the script had been good, even that this like very desaturated approach may have actually worked really well if he really wanted to do a kind of like straight-faced post-apocalypse, you know, this isn't your daddy's Terminator, you know, this is going to be, you know, because it does fit, like, I think the tone of the period in which it came out, you know, late 2000s. If you look at a lot of the blockbusters from around that time, they all kind of had that post 9/11 type of feel to them where everything was very serious. You know, your heroes were kind of anti-heroes. And if the movie is dumb, you just look back on it and it's just like, oh, this movie's not in on the joke. It's kind of sad to watch.
Tragic to watch.
You know, there's like a lot of things about this movie that like I feel like there's little nuggets that where it could have been a good movie, like you said, if it was like written better,
mm-hmm,
if it had like a good script, and you brought McGee in to do this with all his like bombastic ideas of like, let's do real explosions out in the desert, you know, like,
right.
Let's have like actual like real stunts happening and like, let's build a 20-foot model town to blow up, you know, all these things. Let's blow up a real gas, like let's build a gas station and actually blow it up. You know, like Julius, like you said, like the action, a lot of the action is like pretty fun to watch.
Yeah.
And in a better told story, I think it could have been something really cool. The big thing is that it doesn't make sense that the story revolves around this guy, this robot man, Marcus Wright.
Not at all.
And his relationship with Moon Bloodgood. I don't even remember what her character's name is.
Blair. I wrote this down because this was the moment where I was like, uh-oh. The minute her character was introduced and within 5 minutes of the development of this character, I knew the movie was in trouble.
It makes no sense at all. And
it's completely loses its footing, and her motivations are completely ridiculous. Only there to complicate the plot. It's so stupid.
Was there even a motivation? Like, was it just love?
That she likes
like,
him.
She just loves this robot man?
She thinks
man?
He's a hot robot, yeah.
I guess so, right? Like, but, you know, it's like a thing I feel like where they felt like when they were writing it, like, oh, it's a Terminator movie. It has to have a female lead that, you know, is part of the action and is like a badass female character in this movie. It's like, but do you really need that? Like,
but also
know?
she's an awful character. She's so dumb. She's playing right into Skynet's hand. You know, everything that John is telling her, and what's Bryce Dallas Howard's name again in this character? Or in
she's
in this
Kate.
Movie?
She's Kate.
Kate. Right. Right, she's
Claire Danes, grown up.
She's Claire Danes, grown up.
Yeah. Obviously. Wow.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. They look the same.
Nick Stahl grows up to become Christian Bale. Claire Danes grows up to be Bryce Dallas Howard.
Makes perfect sense. Yes,
it's just math. Yeah,
checks out.
Just simple math.
Everything that they're trying to explain to her is like perfectly rational if you think like they're at war with AI machines. You know, the odds are not in their favor. And yes, they're going to try tactics to trick them. And she's like, no, I'm going to free this one.
Yeah.
There's really no give in any of their experience together to give her the indication that he's not going to, like, order 66 the entire, you know, unit, John Connor and everybody, once he's released, you know. And that was something I had a big problem with because I did not understand why she was doing that other than to just, like, have an excuse to have that big, you know, set piece that happens when in the minefield.
Yeah.
Which looked kind of cool, you know, but still.
She's just like, she's basically like the, you know, the same as like the Claire Danes character from the last movie. It's like they just threw her in there because they needed a strong female lead because they felt like they needed one because it's a Terminator movie.
Yeah, they're just checking boxes. Like Cameron did that in the first two, so we got to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, but like, if they had left that out and they make it a movie about, even if they kept Sam Worthington's character in as like, you know, their Arnold replacement, I guess.
Yeah.
And they make it a bromance movie with John becoming friends with Marcus. Like, that's the movie that this needs to be, you know, like, because it makes zero sense also, on top of the fact that, you know, Moon Bloodgood's character, like, inexplicably is on the side of Marcus and trying to free him.
Yeah.
It makes no sense that John is so skeptical about this character because he's the John that had this whole backstory with Arnold in two separate movies already. So he, of all people, should be trusting of Sam Worthington.
But ultimately, what was Skynet's goal here? What were they trying to do with Marcus?
Infiltrate. Gain the trust. That's what the Helena Bonham character reveals in the end when they rebuild him. Remember when he shows up and then
I'm glad that she explained that to the audience, but like it doesn't make sense when you go back to the beginning of the movie with the way he enters the movie so much has to fall into chance that it would happen this way.
Right.
I don't understand how Skynet knows about Kyle Reese. I don't know why he's number one on their hit list. Unless they saw Terminator 1 and 2 and they have that advantage.
I'm telling you, they did.
They must have. They
and
must
Terminator have. 3, they went on the internet and they watched Terminator 2.
There you go. Timeline. Okay. All right. That's fair, but I wish that there had just been a cutaway scene of like a bunch of endoskeletons in a movie theater watching the first two Terminator movies and getting briefed about what to look for, who's on their hit list and everything.
That would have been perfect.
That would have been great.
No, this is definitely a case of lazy writing. It was one of those things, well, we'll just, you know, make sure that we'll hide it nice and good so that way the audience won't pick up on it. But it's one of those glaring things where you're like, no, that's a major plot hole. It takes me out of the movie and it ruins the movie. It ruins the story, not the movie.
Why wouldn't Skynet have like a failsafe? Like the minute he starts to act on his own, like, stop it. Turn him off. Yeah. You're Skynet. You own everything. You know?
Right.
You own all the robots.
Stop it.
Yeah, and it would have been fixed by a simple, I guess, device where they get it. They captured this the Sam Worthington Terminator or the cyborg, and they switch him. Like kind of like what they did with Terminator 2, how he switched his CPU. That would have worked. That would have worked out.
It would have been really interesting if his mission was to kill John Connor.
Yeah.
And he didn't understand why he wanted to do this, why he was compelled. And Connor was the one that had to reveal to him, you're a robot, you know.
Then you
earn your kind of like your little, you know, Blade Runner homage. And then from there, they could reprogram and they could be buds. And then I like this movie a whole lot more.
Yeah,
give this movie some resolution. And then this movie's like a solid, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And also the self-sacrificial story could have started with I'll go to the manufacturing building and I'll get Kyle Reese back. You know, that kind of deal. And that would have been kind of cool. See him kind of run through the new Terminator machines, which was absolutely disappointing at the last fight scene when between him and the T-800, right?
Or yeah. T-800. The one that gets the lava poured and then gets frozen really quick.
Yeah.
What a disappointment. I was expecting a big epic fight between the cyborg and the T-800, and we didn't get that, which sucks.
I felt like all of the cyborgs in this movie were pulling their punches through most of it. Like, I think so. You know, they have plot armor and all of that. I understand. But, you know, I was also trying to look at this movie through the eyes of somebody who maybe doesn't have the context of the first few films. And there is literally nothing in this movie for them. Not a single thing. They would be completely lost and bored out of their minds. I can't imagine this movie being absorbing to anybody unfamiliar with the Terminator lore.
Yeah, like why is Arnold Schwarzenegger CGI and younger? I don't understand.
Oh my god. How is the lighting so perfect that I can't see his junk when the camera's panning up?
Well, that's because this is the first PG-13.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which falls into another aspect of this movie that I don't like, which is it's such a timid film. You know, the first two Terminator movies are really violent films, but there's a lot of restraint to them. This is just like your regular PG-13 cartoonish violence where like nothing really lands. You don't feel any of like any real tension there.
Well, then,
right. You're right.
I think you'll be happy to know that this movie has over the years amassed a bit of a cult following.
That's
amongst,
weird.
Amongst McG fans. And in 2020, I think after the whole like Snyder Cut, whatever.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Release the McG Cut?
There has been a rabid fan base who have been asking for the R-rated McG Cut of Terminator Salvation.
Oh, brother. Well, actually, no, wait. That actually might be pretty cool. Think about it. But no, we all saw what happened with the Zack Snyder cut. That was trash. So now let's not do that.
They would definitely be two different movies. Like I can't imagine a version of this movie with like, I don't know, more extreme violence. That's actually like good. You know, that's definitely not the biggest problem with this movie. It's just one of the things where like I went from disliking this movie to really hating it at the end, when I had this moment where I was like, they're going to Fellowship of the Ring this movie. They're going to end on a kind of cliffhanger that just sets up a second movie without even like making sure people would want it at the end. That was, I think, the biggest travesty of this film.
Well, okay. So speaking about the ending, so I had this weird Mandela effect moment when I was rewatching this movie the other day, because I don't know if you guys read about this or knew about this at the time that this movie was being made, and, you know, was being filmed or whatever, or like being developed. There was a leak of like someone had gotten a hold of the script and leaked what the ending was going to be of this movie, was originally going to be that John dies at the end. And then they take his face off and then graft it onto Marcus's body so that John lives on as a symbol, but is like essentially Marcus, like cyborg robot man.
Whoa.
And I remember at the time I had read about that and was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, that's like, this movie's gonna be fucking wild. And then,
yeah,
you know, I guess because that leaked, was it Warner Brothers, right? That did this movie.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Decided that, like, oh no, like, you need to change the ending now. And they made them change the ending. They rewrote the third act of this movie because of it. And now it's like, you know, John gets Marcus's heart or whatever. But I guess from the time that I watched this movie originally till a couple of nights ago when I rewatched it, I had like switched up in my mind what actually happened in the end. And so I had remembered that the alternate ending in my head. And so I was like expecting a much wilder ending. And then when I saw this ending, I was like, what the fuck? This isn't how this movie's supposed to end. So it was kind of like wild for me.
Yeah.
Coming to the realization, or like remembering like, oh shit, that was like a leak. And then they changed it. And
that's crazy.
I'm not saying that the original ending is better at all, because it's not. It's, in fact, it's probably much, much worse.
Well, judging by the CGI job they did on Arnold in this, I can only imagine what like a CGI Christian Bale's face on Sam Worthington's body would look like. Actually, you know what? I kind of wish that was the ending. That would probably be, that would be at least amusing.
I mean, like, you know, like I'm sure it would have been like a much dumber end. It would have been a much dumber ending. But, you know, at this point, like with the film, like the way it is, like I almost feel like it might as well have just like gone all the way into like ridiculousness, you know, like if it had done that at the end, I would have I would have respected this movie so much more. And I think a lot of my the respect that I did have for this movie was in my misremembering of what actually happens in it.
Gotcha.
But no, I don't know, like that would have been wild, right, guys?
Yeah, actually it would have been. Yeah, now that you mention, I didn't even hear about that or read about that. And now that you mention it, I was like, yeah, that actually kind of would have been cool. That would have been kind of cool. It wouldn't have been, you know, it wouldn't have thrown me off. It wouldn't have been a terrible ending for me. It would have been like, that makes sense. A symbol. Because that's typically how revolutions survive, is that the martyr becomes the symbol. And that's what keeps the soldiers or the revolutionaries keep on fighting until they win. So yeah, that would have been kind of cool. And like you said, a very bold choice. Mm-hmm. It probably would have worked for me if they had done that.
I mean, like, you know, at the time, I don't think it was like, I don't think I was buying it even at the time when I read about it, like, you know, before the movie came out. And I was like, what? This is how the movie's going to end? And I was like, that's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, I was just like kind of excited that they would like do something so stupid.
I felt like this movie was, and maybe this was just like me going into it with some level of expectation based on, you know, my love of this franchise, or at least the first two movies. I really thought that this movie was building towards time travel. I really thought that the end was going to be
yes,
Kyle sent back in time. Like, they realized, they stumble onto what Skynet was up to all along, and it was time travel. And like, oh, fuck, this is it. This is where I need to make my move. I need to send Kyle to the past. And that's when he knows he needs to make his play. And the fact that it's not even necessarily that it falls apart at the very end. It like the idea of Marcus being like, what? Okay, he's human because he gets to have a second chance. Is that the idea? He has like some weird little voiceover.
Yeah.
It's so convenient that he just happens to be, you know, have a human heart on him that he can loan to John. And which is, it's so dumb that you already have this unnecessary character. And at the moment where you realize, like you were saying, Jules, like if it became like a buddy movie between the two of them, it could be cool. The minute this guy's like has his like redemption arc, you're just going to kill him off. And was never an interesting character to begin with. It just doesn't land.
Yeah. The biggest failure of this movie is that there's no real chemistry between any of the characters.
No, not at all.
That make anything believable, that makes anything believable in like the outcome of this movie. John's desperation to get Kyle back is predicated solely on the previous movies and the fact that he knows that, like, oh, that's going to be my dad. Okay, like, I got to save him. It's like there's no actual personal connection there because he doesn't even know Kyle Reese yet, aside from the name. There's no real connection between John and Marcus until, like, I don't know, like the third act when they're both in the warehouse together and they're like, he's, you know, Marcus is helping John escape or whatever. And he's like, oh, you're all right, actually. And so, like,
yeah,
there was no relationship built there. So at the end, when it's like, oh, John's dying, he needs a, like, his heart's not going to make it. Like, why the fuck would Marcus suddenly be like, oh, take mine? You know, I already had my second chance. It's like, what? This guy is a fucking a convicted murderer. You think he's going to like give up his heart to like some dude he just met who was also trying to kill him earlier and was like, you know, shooting at him and like actively harming him up until like 10 minutes ago?
They attempt to sprinkle in some humanity with this character over the course of like his pretty dumb arc throughout this movie. He does show some regret, like from the very opening of like what he did, the crimes that he committed to warrant his death penalty and all of that. But no, I mean, you're right. It's just, it's one of those things that feels like it's forced at the very end and it doesn't land. You don't feel that sense of like, oh, wow, everything came together. You know, it doesn't have that same feeling that the other Terminators have when a robot makes a decision, like in Terminator 2. Like, I have to sacrifice myself for this greater good. You don't get that sense with Marcus that he's actually knows and understands and acknowledges he's doing it for that greater good.
Because he didn't have a relationship with anyone.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I mean, he made out with Moon Bloodgood at one point. And
which was more weird than you know, interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. And then, like, John is just, like, such a separate story in this that, like, doesn't really even come together in any real satisfying way at the end because it's, like, yeah, again, like, it's the whole thing of, like, he doesn't have any real relationship that we see in this movie with any of the main players of this story. His motivation is literally just, oh, I need to save Kyle Reese because he's going to be my dad.
Yeah.
And we only know that because of the other movies. And if we hadn't watched the other movies and we're coming into the, like, if we're like coming into this fresh without knowing anything about Terminator, it's like, we're going to be so confused when John hears the list of names and he's like, oh, I got to save this Kyle Reese guy.
And this was my issue when I was reading some of the background about this movie is that you have, the, you know, everyone that was involved, it seems that in making this movie loves the original films, you know, so they're coming to it as fans. But any of like the kind of like issues that this movie has in its writing, it's all about, oh, but we're going to fix that in the sequel. We're going to punt that to the sequel. That's where we're going to really develop the stuff. And I was reading some of the stuff that they had in mind for a sequel. And I mean, I don't think it would have been good, just judging on, you know, judging by Salvation and how this movie turned out. I doubt it would have been. But it's that kind of like that desperate for a franchise kind of filmmaking that feels so much like it has studio fingerprints all over it that I really couldn't stand about where this movie ended up. And it just irritated me.
You know, what's funny is like McG compared John Connor in this movie to Jesus Christ. And then he was going for like John as like a Christ figure, like the, you know, he's like the savior with like, there's like, you got some resistance members who are believers and non, and then you got the non-believers.
Yeah, right, right.
But yeah, they really don't sell it nearly enough, you know.
Wait, are we sure this movie wasn't secretly directed by Zack Snyder?
Well, there was no T pose, so
okay, yeah, you're right.
he didn't do an obvious T pose. Yeah, yeah. So it's you know, it's clearly not by Zack Snyder, but yeah, they don't sell it, you know.
No.
There's like the scenes where he's like talking on the radio, trying to be inspiring, and like people around the world hearing, but it's just like, you know, they don't give us nearly enough.
It just
enough
looks like army
character.
Dudes on a base. It doesn't look like a post-apocalypse at all. Anyway.
Yeah, that was another thing. It's like, where the fuck are they getting their resources?
Yeah.
You know, like, they got a submarine. They got submersibles.
Like, how is Skynet not finding this shit easier? They've like, taken over the whole global network of everything.
Where the fuck did they get a working submarine? and submersibles to get to the submarine base. And then, like... They got fucking jets flying around.
Jets.
Like, where are they getting the jet fuel? Fucking Judgment Day happened 2003 in this timeline, and this movie takes place in 2018. It's been 15 years, dude.
Yeah.
15 years. Where are you getting oil from? Where are you getting fuel?
This doesn't look like a post-apocalyptic nuclear wasteland at all. It just looks like a fucking... ugly desert.
Well, you know, he actually consulted some scientists about what a nuclear wasteland would look like.
They're like, the desert. He's like, well, that's easy, we'll save some money and go shoot in the desert.
They're like, have you seen Mad Max?
Oh man, I thought about Mad Max so much during the course of it, and just like how colorful that movie is, how interesting the characters are and how they look and how they feel like they're very disconnected from, you know, the world that we live in. And this movie had none of that. It just felt like army dudes.
That's what happens when your lead character in the movie is played by like one of the most uncharismatic men in Hollywood.
Who came on James Cameron's recommendation, apparently. Apparently he had a sit down with McGee and he's like, look, I don't want to have anything to do with this movie, but you should definitely focus on the war and you should definitely hire Sam Worthington. And then he saw the movie and he was like, oof, not good.
Yeah, not good at all.
Although Jim Cam, after watching the movie, was like, this movie sucks, but that Sam Worthington guy, he was pretty good. That it was actually quoted as saying something like that.
Well, no, I thought he recommended him because he had just worked with him on Avatar. Because Avatar's post-production was so long that, you know, if McGee was like, hey, I need my Marcus Wright. He's like, hey, I got
the guy.
I'm
pretty sure I read
you.
Let's see here. Give me one moment. Let me pull this up real quick. Terminator series creator James Cameron considered it a quote, interesting film that he, quote, didn't hate as much as I thought I was going to, and praised Sam Worthington's performance. But also he would not return to the franchise.
Yeah, but of course he's going to praise his performance because he's the leading man in his movie.
Yeah.
So it just makes perfect sense. I don't actually think that Worthington's bad in this movie. It's just he's one of the most bland actors out there. And
yeah, exactly. Like, he's not terrible. His Australian is really peaking out in this movie.
Definitely.
Like, big time.
Yeah.
I've got to save John Connor.
All right, guys, let's move on to awards and demerits, starting with best object, weapon, or vehicle. Julius.
The motorcycle Terminators.
All right. The what are they? The Moto Terminators?
I don't know what they called, but
Moto Terminators cool. is what they're called. That's what I also got. Right.
Yeah.
Designed by Ducati.
Yeah. A Bugatti? A Ducati?
So wait, is in one scene with the Moto Terminators, is it literally playing the same Guns N' Roses song from Terminator 2?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
So Skynet straight up saw Terminator 2 and they're like, that movie fucking rules. So we're just
we're
going to create our entire army out of that movie. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. They watched Terminator 2. It's a biopic about John Connor
in this
universe. Yeah, I got the same thing. They look cool. And then like, you know, when Christian Bale sets up like the whole like he sets the boombox down to play the song. And then does the whole thing to trap it and then, like, you know, stabs it in the spinal cord or whatever and then takes it over. I thought that was dope. And then the way they come out of, like, the feet of a giant mech robot.
I mean, it's kind of dumb, but whatever.
It's dumb, but I was into it.
Yeah.
I liked it better than, like, another liquid person.
Yeah.
No, and I agree with you there. I guess it's just the way it's executed. Because, you know, again, like, because I my pick is actually demerit for the Harvester itself. Like, I don't necessarily think that those Moto Terminators are bad. I just don't really love the context of which they're used. They just feel very much like they saw a Terminator movie and they're like, oh, they use motorcycles a lot. Let's put one of those in here.
The Harvester is the giant mech
robot?
That's
the giant robot, yeah.
I like that too, though.
Well, I kind of like that, but it just makes me think of Transformers, which came out a couple of years before this.
I guess so. I'm going to change my answer, though, to the Harvester and give it an award.
Okay, fine. It'll just cancel out my demerit then.
Yeah. because that's... That scene I'm sure they were trying to go for, like, very serious moment when they're in the gas station and the lady is like, here's some food, you two should eat up, and then, like, the one dude is like, you can't give them that food, that's our food, and then all of a sudden the giant arm pops in and then takes the old lady away.
And she doesn't even react when they're...
I thought that was the funniest shit in the world.
I thought it was funny the second time I watched it, because when it happened, I was like, whoa, 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 I just missed a scene. And I rewound it. I was like, no, I did it. That thing just comes out of nowhere.
It's amazing. It's so stupid.
It's pretty bad.
Oh, man. Dumb shit like that, I kind of can't help but love.
They really fucked up on, like, the, like, you know, doing, like, a, you know, building a kind of like Spielberg suspense by them hearing the sound of a robot coming from far away or something, you know. I don't know. It just seems so weird that
it wouldn't be nearly as funny if they did that. Though,
It wouldn't have been funny, but it would have worked better, is what I'm saying. So
I don't need it to work better, James. Okay. I don't need anything in this movie to work better. I need it to work worse.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Best location or setting, Jules?
San Francisco, I guess.
Frisco, that was the headquarters, right? The manufacturing headquarters?
Yeah, it's like Skynet headquarters is, I guess, now in San Francisco.
Oh, okay. Okay.
For some reason. And I'm assuming it's like, oh, you know, Silicon Valley, whatever. So, like,
gotcha.
They set the headquarters in San Francisco. I don't know if this is an award or demerit, but it's just, like, kind of, like, silly to me.
Yeah.
That it's like, everything else takes place in LA, and then, like, just thinking about, like, okay, so now they have to make, like, this 8-hour car ride to, like, San Francisco to save Kyle Reese.
That's funny. I chose the same thing. Well, for me, I chose it because I like the look of it when he enters, and it's all like a straight up manufacturing, just T-800s, you know. That was kind of cool. But yeah, that was my pick as well.
I just picked the post-apocalyptic future as a demerit. So that means, like, I guess all of the locations and settings in this movie, because it just didn't really look like a compelling post-apocalypse at all whatsoever to me.
Yeah.
I also do not like that Skynet base at all, because it is the site of one of the things I one of the most inexplicable things about this movie is, why are they capturing humans? To what end and what purpose?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah, you're right.
Thought that immediately when they started, like, rounding them up like cattle.
Yeah.
I was like, why aren't they just killing them right there and then?
Yeah.
Like, what's the point of this?
AI just wants to exterminate the human race, not toy with it and play with it. I don't know.
Maybe AI wants to destroy their spirit. Maybe that's what it is.
Oh, they're going to break their spirit and then kill them.
And then kill them. I'm assuming that's the reason why.
Yeah, Skynet kind of sucks in this movie.
Maybe it was an attempt to tie it into the Matrix timeline, where they're capturing them to use them as human batteries.
Oh, yeah.
We'll establish that in the movie.
But they don't explain that. Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just stupid. And yeah, that was another thing where I was like, oh, cool. The third act is going to be a mix of the Matrix and Blade Runner. You know, it kind of feels visually like that's what they're going for, mixed with, you know, the factory settings of all of the, you know, the Terminator climaxes, you know. So No new ideas, no interesting ideas is what was so disappointing about
it. I mean, I think there was plenty of new ideas just weren't interesting. Or interesting, maybe, but not good.
I agree, Jules.
And all the familiar ideas were done better in previous Terminator films. So that's the other issue.
I mean, except
there.
For 3. I still contend that this movie is better than Terminator 3.
Yeah, but that's like comparing like just two pieces of shit. Like at the end of the day, they're both shit. So
yeah, that's true.
I guess it's not entirely fair. I think I did give T3 a pretty high score, all things considered.
Yeah, but you enjoyed it. I remember you saying you enjoyed the movie.
I mean, like I sort of enjoyed it.
Yeah, you know? I mean, you were. It wasn't like you were, you know, head over heels over it, but you did say, yeah, it has its charms, like just like this.
And I think a lot of that was just me like bringing, you know, a lot of my own nostalgia for this franchise to it. But with this movie, like it was gone. It vanished. Like
right. Gotcha.
From like the janky endoskeletons in the first half to like the cartoonish, like familiar T-800s at the end. Like it took all of the things I love about Terminator and kind of like made it suck.
I can't wait to see your reaction to Genesis. Because
that one I haven't seen. This is the last Terminator movie where I was like, that's it, done. No more.
Your hatred of this movie is really living up to my expectations.
Okay, best fight or action sequence, Julius.
The chase scene with the Terminator motorcycles.
Okay.
They get released by the big Terminator.
The Harvester.
The whole sequence was cool. Like I loved that. And they were running away from the... They were in the Winnebago? I can't remember if there was a truck.
Oh, that one? From?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one where he throws the tire iron at the...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
At the truck. Yeah. I know.
He's Australian. He's really good at throwing boomerangs.
He's like, hey, McGee, you mind if I throw a tire iron? It's like a boomerang. Great. Let's do that.
Okay, I like that more now.
Well, that was my pick.
Jules, what'd you get?
I like the giant mech, man. Like the Harvester. Right. I like all it. Right. I like every time it comes, like a giant claw comes in and pulls someone away. It looks so dumb. And yet it's like so hilarious to me. And I liked it. I liked every time it did that. Every time a big claw comes out of nowhere and scoops someone away with like really shitty CGI, I was all about it.
But it needed to happen more often in this movie. Because it only happens the one time, right?
No, it happened again when it took away Kyle Reese or the little girl, one of them.
Okay.
It happened. It plucked them out of their car, their little Jeep or whatever.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then put them into its little cage, its little people cage that it keeps.
And you know what? You just reminded me. That's the reason why I actually second-guessed it, was because when the robot initially pulls out the old lady, I was like, oh, this is going to be really gruesome and cool when he like rips her apart. But then he stores her away as a souvenir. And that's when I started to wonder why they were doing that. And just give me an explanation, even if it's a dumb one. So I'm not asking why this is going on through the rest of the movie.
I love how gentle that thing is with the people too. Like they're not injured after they get grabbed and tossed into their little cage. It's like, and then it like gently places it into its little box and like closes the little box and tucks it away. Keep it
Skynet
safe.
Had no problem nuking 3 billion people, but they handle their prisoners with care. So
yeah. They're not monsters, James.
Okay, I got a demerit for the fight with CGI Arnold because it sucks. It was completely unnecessary. It could have just been an endoskeleton that popped out. Why did it have to be? Why did it have to be Arnold?
Nostalgia, man.
Okay, and that's why I thought we were headed towards the time travel. When he came out, I was like, okay, here we go, time travel. No, a dumb fight with a naked CGI Arnold, and then. That's that. What even happens to that Arnold?
He loses its skin.
Yeah, okay, so he's the one that gets lava'd, right?
Yeah, he gets lavaed, and then Sam Worthington rips his head out in the end.
So over the course of like 5 minutes, he goes through like the entire cycle of what Arnold goes through in the first two movies.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. A lot of callbacks in this movie. Yeah,
it's like poetry.
Some were pretty good, some were, you know, like I said, fell flat.
I don't think any of them were good, but
to me, CGI Arnold was like the perfect button on on a ridiculous mound of poop. It's like the perfect poop colored button on it is just like so ridiculous. And it's like I remember when I watched it the first time, like long ago in the theaters, I was, you know, I got to that point and it was just like, oh, okay, like surely they've exhausted all the stupidity that could come. How can they possibly top the stupidity that they've already dished out? And then we got CGI Arnold and I fucking lost it, man. Like, I was so happy that that happened because it was just so ridiculous and so funny to look at. So yeah, I mean, I loved it, ironically, but I loved it.
I mean, I laughed. I definitely laughed through the scene. I just was like, who is this scene for? If you've seen the originals, you're going to think this looks stupid.
It's for me.
You're going to wonder why there's a CGI version of the California governor in your movie.
Holy fuck, the final villain is California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Whoa.
Okay. Pitch me your Terminator spinoff, Jules.
Okay, so I want similar to what I've already talked about, but I want a buddy bromance movie, not with Marcus. Although, you know, if you were going to use Marcus, whatever. I want to see a buddy bromance movie between John and Kyle now that they're together and he saved Kyle and, you know, he gave him that jacket or whatever. And have it played by Vince Vaughn as John Connor and Owen Wilson as Kyle Reese. Right?
Nice.
Like this
great
buddy comedy, like, you know, Vince, and I want the scene of like Vince Vaughn handing Owen Wilson a picture of his mom. And then Owen Wilson looks at it and he's like, oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. She's really hot. Oh, wow. The things I would do to her. And Vince Vaughn's like, oh, hey, watch it. Watch it, man. That's my mom you're talking about. She's like, oh, wow. I'm sorry.
I would take her to a seedy motel.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll show her how to create pipe bombs. Yeah. That'd be great.
Wow. Hey, you mind if I keep this photo, John? Oh, I want to look at it every night. I think I'm in love with her.
I like that idea too, because then, you know, John finally gets to hang out with his dad after all these years.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I've also always like just like wondered how that scene would play out, you know?
Yeah.
Of like John giving the photo to Kyle, knowing full well that like, oh, you're going to bang my mom. I'm going to send you back in time to bang my mom. Like, what is the like?
No, he can't tell him that. He can't tell him that.
Yeah, because in Terminator, he doesn't know.
Yeah,
that's going to happen, right? Like,
he has to let the romance build naturally.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if he tells him he's going to go back to do this, it'll make him freaked out. He'll get anxiety about it, and he'll fuck it up.
Yeah. So like, I've always imagined like how awkward it must be for like John Connor to like, you know, like after getting to know Kyle to like give him this photograph, and it's like he needs to give it to him with enough time before sending him back because he needs to
fall in love with the
have
picture.
Enough time to look at her picture every night and fall in love. So it's like, what was that conversation like?
You know, that's a weird conversation. Does Kyle like ask John for it, or like, does John offer it to him? Just like, I want you to keep this photo. I want you to look at it and study it.
Well, because Kyle says in the first movie, like, John gave me this photo, right? So it's like, there's has to be like this, like, moment of like John just like being like getting himself ready to like, because he knows he has to give him the photo, It's like, yeah. Oh man, like I gotta give him this photo, but I know that he's gonna to my mom if I do, but he kind of has to in order for me to be born. It's like this moral quandary.
But like the implication in the first movie is like, oh, he could have given him that picture so that he would know who he was looking for.
Right, right. But now in this new timeline, like we've established now that John knows who his dad is.
So this movie should have ended with
Kyle Reese to Sarah Connor's photo. Yeah,
that could have been like a stinger.
Yeah. After credits stinger,
for the next movie. Yeah. But no. What the way this movie should have ended is with John turning to Kyle and saying, "I want you to meet somebody," and then pulling the picture up. Julius, pitch me your Terminator spinoff.
We're going to follow the story of a man named Jonathan Smith. He stumbles into a cave in the Redwoods, hiding from the machines. He finds a cave full of these blue glowing crystals. And luckily, he's an engineer, and he grabs these crystals, and he creates the blue laser gun to fight against the machines. And he goes, and he looks for John Connor, and he gets to John Connor base and tells him, "I got this invention, man. It's going to give us the edge against the machines. Check this out." And we got our laser guns.
I love this idea. It immediately makes this movie better.
that was the biggest disappointment upon watching the movie, was that they didn't even fucking use the blue laser guns.
Yeah.
I thought you were headed towards a lightsaber reveal.
Oh, that would have been cool. Since Disney owns 20th Century, why not? Well, they don't own Terminator anymore, do they?
No. Who owns Terminator at this point?
I have no idea who owns Terminator.
I think Jim Cam partially owns Terminator again. I think
that's right. That's right. So my spinoff, I originally had a different idea, but after this conversation, the spinoff I want to see is just Skynet watching Terminator 1 and Terminator 2. And I want to see the endoskeleton in the theater. I want to see them lining up. I want to see them buying popcorn.
Yeah. Amazing.
I want to see them talking and plotting out their Terminator salvation idea and afterwards.
There's one really obnoxious T-800 in the back who's just like, "Shut up! You're ruining the movie."
Okay, one retcon, Julius.
Do I have to say it? The bullets. The motherfucking bullets. That's my one retcon. Get rid of those damn bullets and give us the freaking lasers.
You know, it's so funny because it did not bug me that much watching the movie, but you're right. It would have made this movie so much better.
Yeah.
It would have made it so much more of a sci-fi. Like, even all of my issues with the look of this movie, you get some bright blue lights in there, and suddenly the movie looks more dynamic and cool, you know?
Yeah, no, it's true. I'm the same. It didn't even register to me that was something that was missing until you pointed it out just now.
Holy shit. Yeah.
And you're right. I think just the color blue in general was missing from this movie.
I think you're right.
Again, James Cameron, if he had been involved. Yeah. Blue fucking
movie. We need some water in this movie.
Yeah. There's no water in this movie, which is why it failed. This is why this movie didn't make money. No water at all.
Exactly. Exactly.
And to add what you said earlier, Jules, about McGee's aesthetic, how he's... Because I remember Charlie's Angels. I never seen Charlie's Angels, but I just remember when I saw clips of it, how bright it was.
Yeah.
It's a very colorful movie.
And when you told me that he went totally dark here and saturated the colors, it's kind of like, dude, that was your mistake. You should have just kept the McGee flavor going, but as a Terminator movie, I think that would have worked out, aesthetically speaking anyway, to his favor if he had just kept that going.
Just look at Mad Max Fury Road. It's not fair to compare any movie to Fury Road, but that is one of the most vibrant, colorful post-apocalypses I've ever seen.
100%.
It can be done. Yeah. So, Jules, one retcon.
Make it a bromance with John and Marcus, you know? Like, get rid of the moon blood good thing. Make it about John and Marcus, like, you know, buddying up. Like, you've talked, James, you talked about the sort of evolution of the Terminator's relationship to man throughout the previous movies, where, you know, the first one, it was the villain. The second one, it was like this, you know, father figure, protector. And then in the third one, it was more just like more machine, who's like just has his mission directives.
Yeah.
And it's apathetic to the plight of John, or like, you know, he doesn't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, playing off of that, like, it should have showed us, this movie should have showed us, could have showed us another face of that evolution of like the relationship between man and machine. You know, a different a way to go about it would have been like, you know, have it be like a buddy movie, you know, of like John and Marcus getting together early on, setting off on their adventure to go save Kyle Reese.
Yeah.
And still cast Vince Vaughn as John Connor and get John Favreau to play Marcus. So then you got Vince Vaughn and John Favreau in this movie. And in the sequel, you got Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson. And, you got the whole crew together.
It's perfect. What a missed opportunity. Could have been done in 2009. It would have been perfect.
Would have been perfect.
So I actually, my retcon is the Marcus Wright hybrid Terminator character, but I actually like your idea. And I think the way that you further fix this is, I don't understand why there was so much put into Cyberdyne picking some rando criminal for their like prototype for this. Right. Like, of all the humans that you could pick, like, what if like Marcus was a soldier who just got like fucked over by the military, sold to Cyberdyne or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Make it a little bit more compelling than just like, oh, he's a murderer, but we're not going to tell you what he did. He just regrets it, kind of.
But you know what you're describing, though, is first of all, it's just like a different, better movie, but that movie is RoboCop.
But for all this movie lifts from other films, like, okay, don't stop there, throw some RoboCop in there.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I instantly like this movie more if that's what's going on. So Golden Cannon Award, Jules.
My Golden Cannon Award goes to whoever it was. I don't know if it was like the sound recorder or whoever who recorded and leaked the audio of Christian Bale losing his shit. Because that is one of the funniest audio clips I've ever heard, man, in my fucking life.
The funniest part of that clip was when he said, "We're done professionally, man. We're done professionally."
Oh, there's so many good bits from it.
I was like, you know what, Christian Bale, good for you for keeping it professional. Even though you're mad.
I don't know if you can call it professional, but
he did lunge at him, right? It sounded like he lunged at him for a
second. Yeah. And he says, like, because he's like, "I'm gonna kick your fucking ass if you don't shut up for a second, all right?"
Yeah, and you can hear the poor cinematographer's like, I was just lighting.
He's so meek, and you can hear like the rustling of like people holding Christian Bale back from like actually attacking this man.
There's did you guys listen to it before we recorded?
No, I listened to it a lot of times when it came out because it was so hilarious. So I kind of know it by memory.
Yeah.
I listened to it. Yeah, when it first happened, and I re-listened to it a lot for this recording.
yeah. It'd been a long time for me, so it was amazing to have like to go back to revisit that clip and realize it is just as good as it was back in 2008 or 9 when it first came out.
One of my favorite bits from it, "Fuck's sake, man, you're an amateur."
Oh my gosh, that poor guy. Yeah.
That poor guy.
Just doing his job.
I love how like soft-spoken everyone is in the room.
Yeah,
like you have to kind of strain to hear what they're saying, and then immediately the booming voice of like pissed off Christian Bale comes in.
And then it was like at one point he's like, "McG, are you seeing this shit?"
Yeah.
And he's just like, "Sorry, Christian, I didn't see it. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I didn't see it."
Oh man. He's like, "Uh oh. American Psycho, he got activated."
Everyone's just like trying to calm him down. There's like a producer who's just like, all right, maybe let's just like take a minute. And then he responds like, no.
Yeah.
No,
don't shut me up.
Take a fucking minute. I don't need a fucking minute.
Julius, what did you get?
It's not a great choice like Jules. I wish I would have picked that one, but it was actually the practical explosion effects. I like that they went back to the practical effects when it was so, at that time especially, so CGI heavy the movies have become, you know, with their explosions and their big scenes. And it was kind of like a fresher breath there to see it like again, like, oh yeah, you know, there's nothing beats practical explosion effects in movies.
Yeah.
And say what you will about Michael Bay. You know, I know a lot of people hate Michael Bay as a director.
Bro, I fucking love Michael Bay.
But his fucking explosions.
Are you kidding me?
I mean, we'll never like no one will ever compare. I mean, James Cameron comes close, but for me, number one is Michael Bay. He just is the master of grand explosions of his movies.
I did spend a lot of this movie wishing that Michael Bay had directed it. Even this script, it's a better movie if Michael Bay made this. And it kind of bummed me out.
Yeah, probably, but I don't know.
I'm giving a broken canon. And my broken canon is either to the producers or the writers or the studio, just whoever decided to make this a bridge to a franchise, to two sequels, to kick off a trilogy. Because, like, yes, that was all the rage at the time in the 2000s. You know, I'm guessing they watched Batman Begins and they're like, okay, all we got to do is get Batman himself to be in this movie and just make it like Batman Begins, Terminator Begins, basically. And to end this movie without any kind of resolution, it feels like this movie is meaningless at the end of the film.
Well, there's a resolution. I mean, they saved Kyle, John survived, and they blew up Skynet. Or one of Skynet's headquarters. Yeah, there's a resolution.
But this movie doesn't work as a standalone film at all.
No, it doesn't.
Well, no. I mean, it doesn't work as a standalone in the sense that you kind of need the context of the previous movies.
Of course, yeah.
I think it resolves itself by the end of it.
It, like, runs out of gas. It, like, runs out of story to tell, and there wasn't a lot of story there to begin with.
Yeah, true.
It's like, it all feels like setup. It all feels like, hey, if you think this is good, just wait till the next one. And no one thought it was good, so there was no next one.
Yeah.
And now movie is this weird outlier in Terminator canon where it just, like, it doesn't fit anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was like, it was going for a new hope, right? It was like, the blowing up Skynet headquarters in San Francisco was like their Death Star. And it's like, now here's like what we have, you know, we have a task ahead of us. Yeah, this was no New Hope and it didn't get its empire. So,
yeah, not surprising. Yeah. I didn't feel any of the same, you know, exhilaration or triumph when this movie's Death Star blew up. But
you didn't like the trench run here?
Yeah, could have been better. Okay, best character overall, Julius.
This is a demerit for Marcus Wright.
Okay, yeah. More like Marcus Wrong?
Yeah, I mean, talk about a name that's on the freaking nose.
Yeah, right?
Marcus Wright. Mark us right. Like, come on. But yeah, that character, yeah, there's no redeeming qualities to the character. I was expecting a lot more from the character. What was his backstory? Why was he in prison? Why was he not, sorrowful for what he did? That kind of deal. And it just did it. It just fell flat. Like, it by the end of it, when he sacrificed his heart to, you know, to save John Connor, it meant nothing. There was no feeling behind it. It was just like, oh, okay, cool. What's next? You know? So, yeah, definitely a demerit for that character.
Good pick. Jules.
I'm going to give an award to Christian Bale, the actor, in his audio clip, because that man, I think, was truly embodying John Connor in that audio clip when he was losing his shit. Because, and I've read his apology where he's like, says like, oh, you know, half of that person was John Connor. Like, if it wasn't in that scene, it was such a tense scene for me. And if it hadn't happened in that scene, I wouldn't have been in John Connor's mind, like headspace, and I wouldn't have exploded the way I did. It was like,
so great way to cover your ass.
Yeah, it was like half of that was John Connor. The rest was all me. And what's interesting about that clip is that like he doesn't have his full, what is he, Irish or British?
He's British. Yeah.
He doesn't have his accent fully. It's like partially American. Like he's like, you kind of get a sense he did go full into this character's headspace and he's like speaking with like, I mean, there's a bit of like, you know, his like British accent peeking in, but it sounds like more American.
There's some truth to that, because I remember I took a theater class in college and the instructor told us a story about his friend who used to be a theater actor, and he was doing the play, you know, it was a big play in New York, and when he went backstage to congratulate him on another good performance of the night, he had to wait outside his door for an hour because every time he would be locked himself in there, he would have to, I guess, put away, as he called it, the character he was playing, and it took him an hour to get himself out of that mindset of the character he was playing.
He just wanted to be left alone. He wanted to take a nap. Right?
But I mean, like, that's the idea of like method acting, right?
Yeah,
like,
of course. Exactly.
You know, that's exactly. Like Christian Bale. He's like known for like really embodying these characters. Like he'll like gain a bunch of weight or he'll lose a bunch of weight.
No,
and,
totally.
Like,
he's like, a great actor.
Yeah, he's a great actor. And like, you know, the fact that he would put that much thought and, you know, effort into embodying fucking John Connor in this movie is like a testament to him
committed,
as an actor.
Shows how committed he is. It's a great performance by him. He deserves that. He deserves that award.
He should have been nominated for that clip.
Yes. I mean, he won the Oscar like a year later for The Fighter. No, he won it for that clip.
Yeah.
The Academy saw that clip and they were like,
retroactive.
Yeah, exactly. We fucked up on that one.
Yeah.
It wasn't eligible for some reason. I demerited Skynet for best character.
Okay.
Because do you
mean like Helena Bonham Carter Skynet?
That was that embodiment of it. I think it really hit home just how dumb Skynet is as like an actual tangible villain in a movie. I like it much more as like a faceless, like endoskeleton or a hunter killer.
Or an internet.
Or the spooky internet. Seeing it like embodied as the, you know, the conversation with Marcus in that scene, which was just awful. It was like, you're Skynet. Like, how are you like continuing to let humanity get away? Like, you know, you basically are such an enhanced version of the human race. Like, I always imagined the war that was happening in Terminator 1 and Terminator 2 was like the desperate last stand of humanity. There were only a little bit of people left to do this. And this is like, oh no, they're scattered everywhere, and Skynet's just like kind of incompetent and can't like capture them for some stupid reason. Even that one part where Helena Bonham Carter says like, oh, you're gonna do the thing we always fail to do, which is kill John Connor.
Yeah, right.
And they still fail. It's another reason why I think trying to build a trilogy out of this doesn't work. They should have put it all into one movie, and if people loved it, go from there. You know, they're sequelize like, from there.
She's like, you're going to do what I couldn't do, like, you know, all these years. You're going to kill John Connor. And he's just like, no, I'm not. Fuck.
Damn it.
Did not account for this outcome. Oh, my calculations were off on that one.
Yeah, whoops. So dumb. Okay, best scene. Jules.
Christian Bale losing his shit. I think I re-listened to that clip more times or for a longer total amount of time than I spent rewatching this movie.
I definitely listened to it a few times. It's aged beautifully. It's so good.
Like a fine fucking wine.
I'll say it again. 100% the best thing that came out of this movie for sure was that little clip.
100.
Julius, what did you get?
I chose a scene that ironically for best scene. I don't know why, but the scene where Marcus Wright, he leaves the destroyed facility and he comes out in the rain and he lets out this blood curdling scream that was so weak. I couldn't help but laugh. I was like, what kind of scream was that? He was like, ah! like is he screaming because he's free? Like, I don't understand. Is he in pain? And I don't know why that scene cracked me up. I rewinded like a few times just to watch it over again because of how like bad it was. And it's like, yikes, you know? So I chose that ironically as the best scene. Because I know there's the chase scene with the giant Terminator machine, which was great.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was fantastic. But I don't know why this one outweighed that scene for me.
Yeah, that was a weird scene. I was very confused in that scene. Right. I didn't understand where Marcus came from, why, what he was covered in. Because there was a brief shot of Marcus on a lab table, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they're infiltrating that base. Yeah, yeah. So, and then they nuke the base.
Yeah.
And then he just comes out covered in mud. Yeah. He's like pissed off. Like he got woken up.
He was somehow reawakened.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a very confusing scene.
definitely.
He looked like he had just like crawled through, you know, 15 miles of shit to come out clean on the other side. Like exactly. Shawshank Redemption ending.
I think that's what it was. I think that's what McGee was trying to go comes, for.
Does the Andy Dufresne scream at the end with the rain pouring down and mud around him. And like,
well, see, Andy Dufresne doesn't scream. He just embraces the freedom and the rain.
And you know, it's funny too, because now that you bring that up, it's kind of emblematic of the whole movie, because like there's that really cool idea for a shot where there's like the time lapse in like one shot of like John Connor getting away, I think on the helicopter. Uh-huh. The camera starts to pan and like the, you know, it starts to turn night.
Yeah.
And
then you see
Marcus come out, which is a cool idea. It's just like not motivated by good storytelling. So who cares? So and that's basically the entire movie in a nutshell.
There you go.
So yeah.
Yeah. I remember when that scene happened, Teresa was like, where did he come from? Like why did he come online just now? And I'm like, you're thinking way too much into this. Like, you need to turn your brain way off right now if you're gonna enjoy this. All right.
Yeah. I guess I watched this movie wrong. I watched this movie.
Like, you need to leave your fucking brain at the door if you're gonna watch this with me.
Go put it outside on the patio.
Yeah. You can get it when this movie's done. Yeah. Okay. But it has no place in this living room right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's fair. All right, guys. Final thoughts and personal rating. Jules.
Hoo-wee. You know, I still enjoyed this movie more than Terminator 3. It's dumb. It's stupid. You need to leave your brain at the door.
Yeah.
Or, you know, toss your brain in a blender and then put it in, like, kind of funnel it back into your ear. Yeah. To fully enjoy this movie. And I think I've mastered the art of shutting my brain off to enjoy dumb movies over the years. And I quite liked this one a fair bit as a result. And, you know, there's just some quality about McChee that I just can't hate, you know, like even when it's not great and the story's really dumb, there's just something likable about him and his movies to me. And so I'm going to give this movie a 7, a soft 7.
Wow. That is way too high.
probably. But
I respect it, though. I respect it. You made your case.
Yeah.
Julius.
Yeah, same with me. It was, I was still impressed by it, but not enough where I wanted to watch the next movie after this one. It was more like, okay, yeah. You know, yeah. It was, it was what it was. And like you, James, when you mentioned earlier, I was hoping for the Kyle Reese being sent back to 1984. And we didn't get that. And that's what ruined the movie for me was, okay, we got what we got. All right, fine. But I still enjoyed the action scenes. They were really great. The practical effects. And like I said, I was distracted when I was watching the movie, but it kept getting back my attention, which is still a testament to McGee's directing. And even though there's a lot of missed opportunities and missed cues and what have you, I still enjoyed it. It's like jewels. And yeah, like you said, just turning off your brain, leaving it at the door. So I'm going to give this a six.
A six. Okay.
Nice.
I think that like if this movie had been tweaked a little, just, you know, visually, and if the movie had just been a little bit more standalone, I think Warner Brothers really wanted a Batman Begins situation with this movie.
Yeah,
I think this was supposed to be Terminator Begins. And if you look at Batman Begins, it is a great standalone film. It doesn't need a sequel at all. In fact, it was made with this idea that it might be the only one. And I think that approach to this movie, I immediately would have liked this more if it had been more satisfying on its own and had really tried to distinguish itself beyond callbacks to the first three movies.
Right.
Going back to Batman Begins, you don't see Nolan making a bunch of references to the Tim Burton Batman films, you know, or the Schumacher ones, unless I'm misremembering, you know. So I think that that's what this movie really needed. It needed to stand on its own two feet and not rely on callbacks and, you know, wait until you see the second one and all of that. So also, you guys gave this way too high of a score. So I'm going to give this a two. I'm going to give this a two.
Wow.
I think there's some interesting bits in this, I guess. I was kind of in. I was kind of in during the first act. It lost me in the second act, and I was just laughing through the entire third act. Yeah, that's going to bring our average to a... It's going to bring our average to a five.
Wow.
Oh, man, I should have given this a one.
My favorite episodes of this podcast are when we cover movies that James fucking despises. It's just so fucking fun to me because they're usually movies that I enjoy on a different level.
Yeah.
Likewise.
Yeah. And, you know, like Howard the Duck.
Yes.
There's just something very fun about these episodes. And
well, then you guys always make me wonder if like I missed something or, you know.
No.
It's just a matter of subjectivity.
You didn't miss a fucking thing.
Yeah.
Although I will say, you know, there are a lot of similarities between McGee and James Cameron.
How so? Oh, that's right. The 90s
defining director. That's right. You know, they're both like directors who live in the extremes. You know,
Jim Cam is
a man of extremes.
That's right. You're right. You're right about
except his extremes are like actually like profitable, and you know. And, you know, moviegoers actually go out to go see those extremes.
That's true. Especially how, you know, Avatar reached, they made their money back, right?
Oh, yeah. And then some. Oh, yeah. And then some. Yeah.
Hey, you know what? The OC went on for four seasons.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Supernatural. He produced Supernatural. That's going on 15 seasons now.
Yeah.
So right. it had a recent revival and it's on like season 15 now. So what I have to say about your profitability comment.
Then maybe, you know what, then perhaps McGee is a better producer than he is a director. How about that?
You know, all this is just to try to persuade us further into becoming the McBreaking Canon podcast.
I mean, now that I find out, we have four seasons of the OC and how many seasons of Supernatural?
15.
15. We could do this forever. We could be McBreaking Canon for the rest of time.
McBreaking McCannon. McPodcast.
I love it. I love it. All right, we started here. So yeah, we'll see how things go. All right, that'll wrap up our discussion of Terminator Salvation. If you would like to support our show, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Breaking Cannon Podcast and Twitter at Break Cannon Pod. Special thanks to Brian Wood for our music. On the next episode of the Breaking Cannon Podcast, our Terminator series continues with a discussion of Terminator Genesis. Until then, thanks for listening.
I'm gonna kick your fucking ass. I want you off the fucking set, you prick. No, don't just be sorry. Think for one fucking second. The fuck are you doing? No, no, don't shut me up. Am I gonna walk around and rip your fucking lights down in the middle of a scene?